Never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm gonna get him!
Welcome to this episode of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. I'm Doug Hagman here at the helm with fellow investigator researcher and my son Joe Hagman. Together we are the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where it's a balmy 65 degrees, if you can believe that. Imagine that. Folks, we broadcast live every weeknight, Monday through Friday. That is 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on our flagship network, the Global Star Radio Network. So proud to be a part of that team. We're also simulcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network as well. And you can watch us live and by archive on our YouTube channel. Just go to our YouTube channel. Just go to HagmanHagman.com, click on the YouTube, or just click on the page. It should be, click on the play button. It should be right there, right on top, every single night. And of course, we dig deep into topics that the mass media doesn't, won't, they refuse to do. I just want to wish everyone that's listening a very, thank you for listening. And we've got listeners from all over the world tuned in right now, all over Europe and all over America, Canada. Just want to say welcome and hello and thank you so much for tuning in. And a couple of things before we get started. Just want to say thank you very much to the people who have actually ordered Stained by Blood on via Amazon. And I'm just excited to tell you right now. And these stats change hourly, so it's kind of a neat thing. But right now, in the top 100. In the true crime slash murder category, that's in the top 100. I think it came in at number 13. What a number, right? So, but just to say this, thank you so much for ordering. And I think you're going to find the book an amazing story. Only because my investigation took place back in 1987. And as you go through the book, and you'll see the connection to Russ Dizdar, for example. Not to him directly, but what he talks about. And somebody asked me the other day, why should Christians even order a book like this? And the reason there's a couple of reasons. Number one, it does address. It addresses the satanic ritual abuse. Think of the Franklin cover-up. Think of the Franklin scandal. And think of not knowing anything about that, okay? And then all of a sudden, bam, So if you've got friends or family members who think, there's stuff out there going on, but they really don't understand it, this is kind of almost a good introduction to these things that we hear about but don't see about. Yeah, yeah, we can do that there in just a sec. The second thing is, you know, thank you so much for your prayers for Katie Whalen. And, boy, it was a great show with her yesterday. My goodness, Katie's testimony, what a fabulous show that was.
Yeah, very uplifting.
Yeah, indeed it was. And tonight we have a great program for you planned here. Shortly we're going to be joined by Pastor Billy Crown. And go ahead.
GetAlifeMedia.com. It's Get a Life Ministries Incorporated, but GetAlifeMedia.com is the website. Pastor Billy Crown is a friend of the program. He's been a guest on several times. And he was at the Hear the Watchman conference with us in Dallas. And he gave a great presentation. I think his presentation, I only got to catch part of it because we were doing some behind-the-scenes interviews and whatnot. But Attack of the Drones, Skynet is coming. Now, he has all these videos, the documentaries that he has shot, on his website for free. Actually, before the show started, I was watching the UFO series that he's done. He also has an RFID series, as well as World Religions, Cults, and the Occult. And he has more spiritual and biblical teachings, such as the character of God and the intimacy of God, parts 1 through 9, on his website.
You can get
lost.
GetAlifeMedia.com.
Wow. Yeah, you could spend days here. But he's got great audio and visual content. And he is a pastor of a church in Las Vegas, which also streams live on Sunday at 10:45 a.m. and Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Yeah. And I would urge anybody to take a look at his church service online, or go there if you're in the area. It's going to be a fantastic show. We're going to be talking about the Islamic invasion of Europe and America, and the potential for an Islamic New World Order, as the church today is grown apostate. We see the prosperity teaching. We see the separate Jesus that is preached by mega pastors. And all throughout this apostate of Christianity, we see the rise of Islam. And Christians are being, not only are they unprepared for this rise of Islam, they are going to be like sheep led to the slaughter once the takeover begins. We're going to talk about that tonight. But let's talk about your book first while we have some time.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, I'm so excited. Again, it's available on Amazon. And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about this for a number of reasons. One, because, you know, it's your book, and then it also involves the story of our family, my family, in which a lot of the details, you know, I know some of the details, and folks, I've read part of the book. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but a lot of what's been going on, or a lot of what you wrote about in the book is unfamiliar to me. So it was your uncle, it would be my great-uncle. Was murdered in 1982.
Yeah, and here's the story, real simply. And this is, I don't want this to be an infomercial for my book, but I do want Christians, especially listeners of this program, to understand why this is important. It was my uncle, my dad's father, not my mother's, but my dad's brother. And what happened was this. And you can, by the way, folks, you can read the first couple of chapters on Amazon. I think first two chapters on Amazon, and you could kind of get a taste for it. It does not get into the real meat of it, but it sets the stage for it. So it was my father's brother. My mom died when I was I think it was 18, 19. And, I grew up in a house, you know, Joe, and you were there. You don't remember this. I've got, you know, pictures of you when you were a baby, but, really, from the time I was 3 years old until I left at 18 or 17, actually, when I moved out, after I graduated, and I had so many happy memories at that house, and it was my family home. That's where I grew up. Think middle class suburbia in the 70s, you know,
the Hillsdale, or
yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. So I mean,
and I do remember.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'll see some. You've got some pictures, you know, and there are some pictures of you as a child or, you know, young man there. But I mean, so think suburbia in the 1970s, where in 60s, where we didn't lock our doors. And we had an outside screened-in patio my dad built, I mean, by hand. And, you know, we kept a small little TV out there and a small refrigerator. And, you know, I mean, it by no means was it upper scale. It was just in a nice area. So my mom passed away, and that's a story in and of itself. She passed away when I was about, I think, 19. I actually had stopped by on a Saturday morning to take her to breakfast and to apologize for the fight I had with her the previous Thursday. And when she didn't answer the door, I used my key to get in, and I yelled for her, and I found her dead in bed. And after I moved out, my folks took my bedroom, and you know how the empty nest things go, right? So anyway, so that was my bedroom where she passed away. And then about 4 years later, or three years later, my uncle, my father's brother, moved in with him to, you know, he was a confirmed bachelor. By that I mean he was a homosexual, but the family didn't know that. And I had my suspicions, but I was not that close to him. All right, so anyway, it's incredible because my father worked third shift. He worked first shift, and, you know, it was opposite shifts. But anyway, so my dad loved the company and was very grateful for the company. And just to set the stage for this, and again, this is all important information. Most of it's in the book, but I'll give you some little tidbits here that aren't. And so I drove to, or one day in April, and this is 1982, I got a phone call from my father saying, hey, something happened here at your house, my house, his house, that is. So this is before, you know, pre-cell phones, pre-anything. So I just happened to be home, and my dad had returned from his third shift job, and I walked in. He walked into the house, and he had found my uncle in the very same bedroom that my mom passed away in, and in the very same bedroom that I'd grown up in and collected so many nice memories from. And I didn't know exactly what was going on. My dad was not, I mean, he was coherent, but it didn't register. So I sped up to the house and walked in, and what I saw was just, it just struck me. My senses were assaulted. It was one of the most hideous crime scenes. You know, right now, the big thing, the big thing is talking about the crime scene, talking about the O.J. Simpson crime scene, right?
Yeah, and you have shows like CSI, crime scene investigations, where they go through, obviously it's TV, it's not real life investigations, how police handle investigative.
Well, back then there was no CSI. Right. I mean, it was, you know, you got to figure 1982, DNA was just coming in. I mean, they had fingerprints, of course, but no, certainly no DNA and stuff. But when I walked into that house, you know, my dad met me at the door, and the look of horror on his face is just incredible. So when I walked into the bedroom, and I had spent a number of years, previous 5 years, in the EMS field, and I'd seen decapitations on car accidents. I had seen, I mean, believe me, pretty much all the gore that you would ever want to see, especially being a young man. But when I walked into the bedroom, it was a scene of carnage like I've never seen before. It was a butchering of my uncle. And again, folks, think of it this way. You know, you're growing up in your house, and you have all these memories, beautiful memories, but you see this scene of carnage, devastation, and virtual disembowelment. My uncle was stabbed well over 36 times, and post-mortem and pre-mortem and peri-mortem. Her defensive wounds, and I looked at his body, and I was just wow. So, and then I beat the police and the rescue by a minute or two or three, I don't know, and they brushed by me, and so that kind of sets the stage for what happened.
Occurred in 1982.
Right. And
when
did
you start your investigation on this?
Well, you know what? And this is a funny part. And you can read this in the book too, or read this on Amazon. After the police and fire, in fact, the respondents, the fire and rescue who came, I'd known the guy. In fact, I'd worked with a guy. He was, yeah, I mean, we worked together. But anyway, this happened in 1982, April 1982, and I remember being in the house, and I remember walking past the bathroom. And something caught my eye, and I thought, you know, okay, something doesn't look right there. And I walked. This is during my initial. I mean, this is on the day of the murder, in the morning of the murder, minutes after my father found my uncle. And I looked, and I said, "Oh my word!" I mean, there's blood all over the shower. I mean, think about that for a second. Well, and this, what really got my attention was stained in blood, and memorialized in blood, was a bloody palm print on the shower. And it didn't register right away, but the killer had to take a shower afterwards, after killing my uncle. All right. And again, folks, this is before I knew anything about things like Russ Dizdar talks about, things like Steve Quayle talks about. I didn't know anything. All right. So during my inspection, two of the body, because I lifted the blanket up and to look at them, and there were some things I was doing, and you know, not tampering with a crime scene, but doing things I should know better not to do, you know. Well, what happened was I got some blood on my arm, and of course, when the detectives came and the police came into the back end of the back seat of the squad car, they put me and my father, and you know, it's like, okay. You know, what's this about?
You remember the story Pastor Langford told in Montana? His dad was living on a trailer on his property, had a stroke and fell and hit his head on the corner of a table.
Yes.
And because the blood and the it looked like there was some kind of violence that was committed, how he was detained.
Yeah, and he told me that in private show time.
Yeah, too. He said that in the sermon he gave.
Yeah, no, I mentioned that because until you're in that position, and you might think, well, I'll never be in that position. Yeah, that's what I thought too, and everyone thought. But yeah, so anyway, my dad and I were put in the back of the squad car, and we're taken to the police station. Of course, we had to give elimination fingerprints and such, and they saw the blood on my arm. And of course, you know, it's always an issue. So. I describe in the book what happens next, but you know, to watch a family member, that being my father, just being dumbstruck by what happened, and of course being in shock by what happened, not knowing that there was a secret life. See, homosexuality, and I don't preach this in the book. I just give kind of the facts and tell you what happened, because what happens in this is really something else. But homosexuality has with it, the lifestyle has with it, a certain risk. And it's not AIDS. I mean, it's beyond AIDS. It has a certain risk, especially, and as a Christian, I think we all have to acknowledge that behavior. Now, this is not hate speech. This is just fact, because if you look at the crime statistics, just look at that. But I guess I digress from your question. So,
And I know we're coming up to the halfway point where Pastor Billy Crone will be joining us. When this murder happened, you were not an investigator, or were you at the time?
No. Excuse me, no, I was not. In fact, I was just getting off of, I was just,
Is this when you were doing the, EMS?
Yeah, I was just getting off that, and, I was just, because I was sick and tired of all the death and destruction and death and carnage and stuff. So I had enough of that. So I was just getting off of that. And so fast forward 5 years later, 5 years to the day, and that's...
The police made no progress, correct?
Oh, that was the other thing, too. Yeah, I shouldn't mention that. Obviously, there was enough forensic evidence there in terms of fingerprints and what have you to make an arrest. And when... The guy, the cop that took us, my dad and I in, your grandfather and I in, to a police station, said, look, given the amount of evidence there that I saw, the arrest should be, you know, forthcoming any time. Even back then, in the 82, they had the ability to match fingerprints. Now, it was a manual kind of match where you had a
microscope.
Well, not that,
microscope, yeah. Yeah, magnifying glass.
And, no, well, not that. But But anyway, they had this, but you had to manually, like, for example, you had to match somebody. If you had a known, you had to match the known with the unknown. So anyway, they said, oh yeah, you know, it's going to be just a couple of days, I'm sure. Because a hideous murder like this in this town would certainly be, you know, they'd be able to discover it. Bottom line, was 5 years.
The news all over it?
Oh, the news is everywhere. And as a matter of fact, it's amazing because I had sat, in fact, I had sat in a restaurant with my father and a woman who became my stepmother later on. And it's amazing to sit in a restaurant and know the innocence of your father. And folks, please pay attention to this point. This is not in the book. But think about this. That week, it was a talk of the town, obviously, because my uncle was a school teacher, okay? And it was a hideous murder. But think about this. You're in a restaurant, a very popular restaurant. No one knows who you are, really.
And there's about 100,000 people in Erie.
100, yeah,
107,
roughly. Yeah, whatever. But in hearing the conversation of the table next to you, and they're talking about the murder, and having and hearing the guy say, well, I think the brother did it, meaning my father.
Yeah.
Okay, and they've got no clue who we are sitting there, and then the woman says, "Well, I think maybe the son might have done it, meaning me," and I think the motive was murder or was robbery or whatever, and hearing this back and forth, all you know, again, this is not in the book, this is extra, so you know, be very. Circumspect when you talk about stuff like this, okay? When you are in a restaurant, if you think you know something, and this isn't funny, oh, I think I know this. Oh, may I don't think you do, you know? And it took everything in me not to go over to that table at the time, because I was a cocksure young guy, you know, to kick the chair out from underneath the guy. But anyway, I didn't do that, but think about that the next time you're having a discussion, because you don't know who's sitting next to you. But it was 5 years, by the way, 5 years, no arrests. It was a cold case.
He said, all right, I'm gonna do my own investigation.
Well, no, one night, my father, and we had become estranged, folks. You know, my dad, my family and I, my dad, me, okay, I guess.
You went through a number of years where you didn't talk.
Yeah, and I was an idiot, okay? In this book, this is during a time when I was not a committed Christian. I was just an idiot.
I know how angry PI.
Yes, and I had become a PI like the month before, and hooked up with a guy who's now deceased, and my father called him up, not me, him up, and said, "Hey, do you think maybe it's been 5 years now? No arrests have been made. Something's wrong here. Do you think you could take a look at it?" Meaning my partner, not me, of course. No one would turn to me because I don't know anything, and that was true to a large extent. And he took the case for a dollar. My dad handed the dollar. And I just tossed a dollar to the garage. That's in the book, and that gets into now some stuff. But it takes you from that point, from that 5-year anniversary, the day that we got that case, into the arrest, and a little bit beyond, and into that investigation. There are some things that happened that I've never admitted before anywhere in that book. There are some admissions in the book I've never admitted, and Christians,
yeah, we have Pastor Billy Crum standing by.
All right,
but one last question: why would a Christian want to read the book?
Well,
about the murder?
That's just it. You know, you think Murder and Mayhem, you think Twilight series, you think OJ, and you think this is all just BS. No, what perhaps of all my failures, and there are many, one thing I failed to really get across was the back then and even today, there's satanic ritual abuse. There's satanic worship. There's all sorts of this. The bottom line, real quick, is this. What we took, and what I took as a murder investigation, suddenly took a dark turn, and the murder was secondary to something we stumbled into. And what we stumbled into is the very thing that Russ Dizdar talks about every day or gives seminars about. What we stumbled into is what's taking place in your city, in your town today. What we stumbled into is something that's so horrific, I mean, even now, I think, had I known then what I know now, man, it would have been a lot different. And thank you for allowing me to do that, but let's get to our guest.
And we'll talk more about this in the coming days and weeks. as it is, especially after I finish reading the book and get a better understanding of everything that you put in
there. You know, I just want to say one last thing. I did not write... people say, well, why now? In fact, I was talking to Judy McLeod from Canada Free Press today, and she knew I was doing this book, but people I said, well, why after all these years? Why now? There's one reason. Time is short, and we need to know what we're up against. And we didn't, in order to know what we're up against, in part, I believe, in part, you need to know a little bit of the history behind things. And this is kind of like Eyes Wide Shut, and it'll wake you up. That's what I believe. You know, if you've read it, you know, leave a helpful review, or an honest, I shouldn't say helpful, leave an honest review on Amazon. If you haven't, it's on Amazon. So there you go. Thank you for asking about that.
All right. Tonight, our guest, Pastor Billy Crone. His website is getalifemedia.com. He is a pastor of a church there in Las Vegas. You can see his church service streaming live Sunday, 10:45 a.m. and Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. And Pastor Crone, I have not watched your church service yet, but I hope to be able to this Sunday, as I was not aware that they were available online. We had yet to hear the Watchman Conference. You talked about the attack of the drones. Skynet is coming. It's great to have you back on the show.
Hey, thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Absolutely.
We had the best time talking to him behind the scenes at Hear the Watchman.
Yeah, this guy, you talk about a sense of humor. And you know, just an upbeat, positive attitude, very funny. You know, this is the man to talk to. You know, some pastors are very serious, and some, you know, this guy, he walks the walk, and he talks the talk, and he walks the walk. And it's always fun to have him on the show and to be around him. And I missed the interview behind the scenes that you did.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'll tell you what, Pastor Crone just knocked it out of the park and really was so gracious with his time, so... Can't we, you know, it's great.
Well, Pastor Crone, we see a lot going on in our world today. I know we talked, you know, a couple days ago about what we were going to discuss tonight, and you wanted to talk specifically about the terror that is happening in Europe, the Islamic invasion, the Arab invasion. Where do you want to begin?
Well, you know, again, I want to apologize for asking to talk about a topic that is so not relevant with, yeah, whatever. it's just so crazy. We just came out with this study, right? Eight studies, 8 hours, and it's all chock full of video evidence, news clips from here in the United States, around the world, interviews with the actual people involved with the Muslim terrorists and things of that nature, what their true motives are, including that with immigration and how that's a smokescreen and things of that nature. We just came out with it, and it's just like, you got to be kidding me. It's just, everything is just going nuts. And what I tell people, because there's, you know, first of all, let me back up. The scripture says in the last days, Jesus said, right, Matthew 24. And, you know, the disciples come to him there in that classic passage, and they ask him, you know, hey, tell us, you know, when's this going to happen? What's going to be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? And the first thing out of Jesus' mouth, he says, watch out that no one deceives you. Okay, long before Jesus ever mentions the increase of earthquakes or famines or pestilence or signs in the sky, persecution, wars, rumors of wars, all that stuff that we're typically jumped to in that passage, the first thing out of his mouth, he says, watch out that nobody deceives you. In fact, if you look at the rest of that chapter in Matthew 24, the whole theme is deceit, 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 right? He talks about false prophets and false Christs and false teachings. In fact, the deceit level is at such a level that if you're not careful, he even says even the elect could fall for it if you're not careful. And certainly there's a lot of deceit going on, certainly with spiritual issues. But I really think that one of these last days deceit is this current issue with ISIS. And when I keep telling, I just finished with another interview a few couple days ago, and I says, listen, because everybody's talking ISIS this, ISIS that, ISIS this. Well, what was it before ISIS? You know, Boko Haram. What was it before that? It was Hamas. What was it before that? It was Al-Qaeda. What was it before that? You know, Osama bin Laden. Right, and the lie that's out there is that they're just a small sect of Islam. You know, these extremists, and the latest quote, small supposed sect extremists, is ISIS. That's a lie. Okay, and this is what I keep saying: ISIS is not the problem; Islam is. And this is where people are being deceived. You know, and again, they're being deceived by the president. They're being deceived by our government. They're being deceived by the school system, the court system, and the media, etc. this is what ISIS is doing, what Islam teaches, okay? But again, they're not the only ones, okay? Why are they so heartless? Why are they so cruel? Why do we keep seeing the slaughter of innocent people, including women and children, and blowing people up and beheadings and all that stuff? Because that's what Islam teaches. That comes straight out of the Quran. Islam, first of all, you got to understand, means submission, right? And a Muslim means a submitted one. Well, what do you submit to? Well, let me just give you real quick a small sampling straight out of the Quran. Well, first of all, Muslims, you know, submitted ones, are to do battle for Allah. They're to go to war for Allah. They are to kill those who are against Islam and who are against Allah. And I'm just, this is straight out of the Quran. They are to slay the non-Muslim. And they specifically call out the people of the book. The people of the book is who? The Jews and the Christians. See, this is what some Christians don't even get. They think, oh, they're just going after the Jewish people. No, the people of the book in the Quran is Jews and Christians. Okay, they're to behead people. We even document, and this, we're just using their own book, the Quran and the Hadith and Sirah and the other writings that they revere as well. But they say it's okay to torture, it's okay to burn, it's okay, it's horrid, folks. You wish you were making this up, but we're not. ISIS is just doing this, but they're not the only one. We even have them on video in their own camp, right, admitting that this is what all of them really want to do. All Muslims believe this, true Muslims, because that's what the Quran teaches. Now, obviously, I don't recommend it. It's not Christian. It's not right. But this is the facts. This is what people are being deceived on. Okay, and they have to submit to what is said in the Quran because that is the, quote, will of Allah. Otherwise, they're not being a good submitter, i.e. a Muslim. Okay, and furthermore, if that wasn't concerning enough, you guys heard about Sharia law, and that, you know, once in a while they'll talk about that in the media, okay? They not only, if you disagree, right, because you think about it, you and I as a Christian, if, you know, we share the gospel, the love of Jesus Christ, and how God is willing to forgive you of all your sins through the work of Jesus on the cross, and purely as an act of his graciousness and goodness and mercy, he's done all the work for you, it's a gift, you just receive it by faith because you can't earn it, etc., and that you can go to heaven. Well, if somebody disagrees, then what do we do? Well, we just keep praying for him, might try again later if God should give you the opportunity, and you'll walk away, right? Not Islam. Islam, if you disagree, you're in a heap of trouble. They're going to kill you, they're going to chop your head off, etc., etc. And this is in our own writings. And this is what a Muslim means. You have to submit to that. And if you don't submit to what is written in that book, then you're not a true Muslim. But what they want to do is, again, if you disagree, they want to kill you, okay? But they want to institute their version of, quote, civil law. Okay, again, called Sharia law. Let me read to you just a few of those things. This is just a few. What is in Sharia law? And folks, this is what they want to do to the whole world, which is another level of deceit. Oh, when they come over here to America, they're going to assimilate and they're going to be good. No, they're not. Islam by itself will never assimilate with any other nation. They will only assimilate to what Allah says. That's the bare bones definition of what it means to be a Muslim. But listen to this law. If you commit a theft, okay, and they do this right now all over the world. I'm not making this up. If you commit a theft right now, they will amputate. They will cut off your hands and or your feet, okay? If you criticize or deny any part of the Quran, it is, you are punished, you're killed. It's punishable by death. If you criticize or deny Muhammad, it's punishable by death. If you criticize or deny Allah, it's punishable by death. If a Muslim becomes a non-Muslim, let's say becomes a Christian, it is punishable by death. And by the way, when I was even in Bible college in Sacramento back in the day, I ran into a guy who, this really happened. His family, his Muslim family, tried to kill him. And I was doing this internship for this guy who was, you know, doing tents and doing evangelistic ministries and stuff, and I was helping him. And anyway, so I went over there one time, and he had this new guy, and I forget his name, but he's a Muslim guy, and he just became a brand new Christian. And he was living with this guy, and the reason why is because he became a Christian. He went home, okay? As soon as his family found out, they stabbed him in the stomach, okay? Tried to kill him. He managed to escape. Okay, and then within a day or two, they had completely liquidated his account. Obviously, his wife left him, his whole family. And basically, this is real. This is in America. This is not in Saudi Arabia. This is not in Afghanistan. Okay, and that was frankly about 20 years ago. It's even worse today because the population has grown. Okay, but if you become a non-Muslim, you are to be killed. In fact, the person who witnessed you, led you away from Islam, okay, according to Sharia law, you die too. And a non-Muslim man, if you marry a Muslim woman, you die. Okay? And then, this is what gets me. Where's the women's rights groups on all this issue? Where is the women's rights issue? Because this is one of the most horrid treatment towards women. And yet it's basic silence, you know, from those groups. But basically, a woman in Islam, you can have only one husband, but a man can have multiple wives. A man can unilaterally divorce his wife, but the woman needs her husband's consent to divorce. A man can beat his wife for insubordination. You have to have the testimonies. Listen to this one. You have to have the testimony of four male witnesses, okay, required to prove rape against a woman. What? And listen to this. A woman who has been raped cannot testify in court against a rapist. Oh, and by the way, don't forget, a woman can't drive a car. And I'm not giving you all of them. But folks, this is really the threat that's going on. This is what's going on in Europe. They're further along than we are, but we are kidding ourselves if we think this is not coming here. And if we don't deal with the problem at its root, at its source, we're never going to deal with it correctly. It's ISIS is not the problem. Islam is. And until we deal with it, folks, we are being deceived, just like Jesus said was going to happen in the last days.
You are so right. And Pastor, in the Quran, Surah 385, just to speak to your reference to assimilating and taking on different religions, Surah 385, if anyone desires a religion other than Islam, and of course submission to Allah, never will it be accepted of him, and in the hereafter he will be in the ranks of those who have lost. Surah 929, fight those who believe not in Allah nor the last day, nor acknowledge the religion of truth, even if they are of the people of the book, and so on. What's the disconnect here? And you're right. I mean, first of all, we're being lied to on a huge level, but what's the disconnect? Why isn't Susan Sarandon and Sally Struthers and, boy, am I behind times, but you know, Rachel Maddow, why aren't they saying, or even Megyn Kelly saying, wait a minute, there's a problem here with Islam. Well, what's the deal?
Well, I think, one, there's a deliberate cover-up that's going on. I think one is this is being deliberately done, because this is one of the most insane things that we could ever do in our country, because we're literally inviting a ticking time bomb to go off. Right now, there's theories, and on our study that we've entitled Islam, Religion of War or Peace, which you can get on our website, getalifemedia.com. And folks, it's only $15. That includes shipping. It's 8 hours, 4 DVDs. Okay, getalifemedia.com. And by the way, you can even get a free downloadable workbook, and it's great for all kinds of stuff. But you need to get equipped, folks, because churches aren't even talking about that, and maybe we'll get to that in a little bit. But I share on the study, if you will, the Crone theory. Long term, because this is insane, you know. And I use the analogy back in World War II, right? Would it be hypocritical? Would it be unloving, intolerant, if the Nazis were wanting to come over here and immigrate to the United States during World War II? No, who would ever make a statement like that, right? Because why? Right. Because they are a threat. They're about world domination. Islam is all about world domination. It's about bringing the whole planet under the submitting under to Allah. Again, that's what the term means. Islam means to submit, and a Muslim is a submitted one. Okay, and so they are here to take over in the United States, over in Europe. Okay, and they're doing that in a multitude of ways. But we're doing this on purpose. Our government is allowing this on purpose. And you think, well, this doesn't make sense. Well, folks, if you understand the true teachings of Islam, okay, it is a powder keg waiting to go off. All somebody has to do, okay, is declare a jihad, and every Muslim is bound, okay, they are bound to take up arms and do what Allah says. In fact, if you look at these statistics, and we share statistics, basically the bulk of American Muslims, okay, like 58%, okay, they think that Sharia law is great. They want it here in the United States. They do not want to submit to the American way of life, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, American courts of law, none of that stuff. They want this here. And the bulk of them also think that what ISIS is doing is perfectly fine. This is here in America. So if somebody, if you will, one of these priests, give the Islamic priests, if they give the order and say, all right, it's time to, you know, do something to America. Folks, they are bound to do it, and they're all over the place, and we keep inviting them. So I'm going like, this is insane. Anybody who knows Islam, this is exactly what you're inviting to your country. It's lame. It's like, hey, come on, Nazis, during World War II, let's compromise our security. This is what's going on. And so my theory is like, well, it's so insane, there's got to be a reason. And what my theory is, part of the reason is I think you need to create a crisis so you can manage the outcome. Now, bare minimum, if that event were to go off, and if all the Muslims in the United States were to declare jihad here in America, what would you have overnight? You would have martial law. You'd have to declare martial law. You'd have to declare martial law. Now, at that point, boy, anything goes, right? Anything goes.
Absolutely.
Now, and that's a whole other topic right there. But I think another thing, too, is, because, and this is another issue that has to do with Bible prophecy, the Bible says in the last days, you're only going to have deceit. But part of that deceit is you're going to see rise on the scene across the planet a one-world government, a one-world economy, a one-world religion, and you got this implementation of this thing called a mark of the beast that controls what people buy and sell, etc. So this aspect of a one-world religion, not only do you have Pope Francis right now going all over the planet, he's making what Pope John Paul II did look like child play, but he is out there all over the world. He's even, I don't know if you saw just recently, he was kissing the feet of Muslims and everybody saying we're all brothers and sisters in Christ. He's like, what? Anybody that says all religions basically teach the same thing just told you you don't know anything about world religions, and you certainly don't know anything about Christianity, and or you're lying, because they're radically different. We're not all, it's not all the same. Islam is not at all like Christianity. What are you doing? But he's going around, trips around the planet, and he's coercing people that, hey, we all just got to get along. The church is falling for this baloney, too, with the ecumenical movement, and we all just got to get along, and guess who wants to be at the top? Guess who wants to control all the religions on the planet? The Vatican. Right?
Yep.
And so he's going around, traipsing around the planet, and what's the Bible say? You're going to have a false prophet, right? A religious leader who works in conjunction with the Antichrist, this one world government system, right? Revelation 17. And then, you know, he's going to grab control of that. And this is what the Vatican is doing. So they've already got the pieces in play. We've talked about this before in our other studies, the Final Countdown study, et cetera, our Bible prophecy studies, 80 studies that we've done on that. And, when you take a look at that, they have already got the major pieces in place. And what they're crying out, and this is every major religion on the planet right now, is calling for a single entity to control the religions on the planet. And to basically, verbatim quote, is basically they're crying out right now that they want a United Nations of Religions to control all the religions on the planet, just like the United Nations controls the governments on the planet. This is the outcry right now behind the scenes. Most people are too distracted with what's going on with the football draft or basketball playoffs and whatever. And this is all going on behind the scenes, and the Pope's over there, and of course he wants to be on the top. But here's my point. They've got all the pieces in place when it comes to this aspect of a one world religion, right? But you need a really good excuse to really put it into play, right? What's going to be your excuse to, you know what, we got to move from the idea stage to put this into play? We need some form of control on the religions on the planet. Aha! Well, it just so happens that you got this dangerous religion called Islam, who is so violent that if you disagree, we'll kill you. And now they're being spread all over the whole world, and now we're starting to see their behavior, the fruit of it, unfortunately, even here in America. And if all of a sudden, all across the world, the whole thing went off, then after the dust settles, after martial law, after who knows what, okay, stir it all together, you know what the world's probably going to cry out for? We need some sort of united nations of religions to control the religions on the planet, because we can't let these extremists do this ever again, right? We need somebody to control the religions. That's your ultimate excuse. Most people don't realize the piece is already in play. They just need the right problem to come on as the excuse. Same thing with 9/11, right? What happened after 9/11? I mean, I still can't believe this. 9/11, you know, we can talk, you know, who did it, whatever, and all that stuff, and obviously I don't buy into the official response from the government personally. But what happened after 9/11? 9/11 became the ultimate excuse to pass forward the Patriot Act, which is pukey, because, excuse me, there's nothing patriotic about it. Ripping off our freedoms, Big Brother on steroids, okay? And to launch Homeland Security, right? And I'll never forget when they came out and they announced Homeland Security after 9/11. You know how huge that document was? And do you really think that they whipped that out, they typed it up and figured it all out, made the game plan and in 2 weeks after 9/11? Are you crazy? That thing was already in place, sitting there, waiting for the right crisis. Folks, I'm telling you, I truly believe Islam is the same thing. Why, though? This is insane. This is insane for our government. It's insane for Europe to invite this dangerous, threatening religion on purpose into your country. You can't even ask questions. You talk about building a wall, people laugh at you. You talk about, we need to take a look at this serious. Oh, we can't do that. That's discrimination, right? It's crazy. But if all of a sudden it was spread all over the world and all of a sudden order was given, create chaos, jihad, you have your ultimate excuse not only to maybe put in the clamps for a true global government, but at the same time, maybe also the excuse to have somebody control all the religions on the planet. Now, what's freaky is that's two of the major pins. Two of the major pins that you're going to see during the seven-year tribulation. Folks, this is how close we are.
Yes, we are. And what you said about the ecumenical movement, the interfaith religious movement that we see in many of the bigger Christian churches today, we talked about at the beginning of the show, the apostasy, how there has been a falling away from the church. It has, you know, laid the foundation and the groundwork for the acceptance of this interfaith relationship. And from Alice Bailey's The Reappearance of the Christ to Our Global Neighborhood from the UN, they talk about this coming time, just as you said, Pastor Crum, where there's going to be a crisis. And out of that crisis, there's going to be a coming world teacher to restore unity.
Yeah.
What they say in their document here is that, you know, after this crisis, the core values of the UN are going to be justice and equality. But they go on to say that mutual respect is broadly defined as tolerance. They go on to say, when globalization fully enters and is applied, there will be people who are intolerant. Individual achievement and personal responsibility are counter to the value of mutual respect. That from Robert Mueller from the UN. And it goes on to say, basically, in Alice Bailey's The Reappearance of the Christ, that the Christians are going to, you know, not accept this new world leader, and they're going to be shown for what they are, as intolerant, hateful, unaccepting, and they will have to be exterminated. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you, too, because I think that's the other setup. Because, again, you know, if you will, who's the scapegoat to usher in martial law? You know, again, this is a theory. I'm not going to say thus saith the Lord. What's the scapegoat for usher in martial law, push for the one world government, maybe officially get it locked into place? Because that would be a global crisis, wouldn't it? If you had jihad going on the planet, literally rioting, killing in the streets, beheadings, all that stuff. And then, of course, at the same time, your excuse for a one world religion to be controlled as well. But what people don't realize, the same terminology that they're using on these folks, they've been using on us since 9/11. And I'm talking about Christians, right? We're not just evangelicals. We're what? Right-wing extremists, fundamental evangelicals. Now, if you're paying attention to the news, that's the same ones that they're using on the Islamic terrorists, right, that everybody's saying we need to hunt down and kill. Folks, we're next on the list because we will never go along with the one world religion. We can't, okay, because Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven. Right? John 14:6, Jesus said, I didn't say it. He said, I am the truth, the life, the way. Nobody comes to the Father except through me. I didn't say it, he did. So how could you be a Christian and say that there's more than one way? You can't ever go along with one religion. But you're absolutely right. There's a movement in the church, and again, we expose this for all it's worth in our study on Islam. It's a false teaching going through the church called Chrislam. Right? And basically, they're teaching that Islam and Christianity can coexist. Right? Now, one of the biggest culprits of that, okay, and we expose it and bring out actual PowerPoint slides of them doing it in their church, of course, unfortunately, is Rick Warren of the Saddleback Church, okay? And unfortunately, he's one of America's influential so-called Christian leaders, okay? But he's got this program called Kingsway, and this is basically merging, okay, Islam and Christianity, creating this Chrislam movement. And it's absolutely crazy, okay? And again, folks, you can check this out. This is easily documented. You can check it out. But he's down there partnering with Muslims in Southern California in their mosques, okay, and saying that we need to work together and you know, it's because, you know, Christians and Muslims worship the same God. What? How does that even come out of your mouth? Allah is not the same God as the God of the Bible. Allah says, you die for me. The God of the Bible died for you because he loves you. Allah is not a loving God at all. In fact, he's very indifferent, impersonal, right? And Islam is a works-based salvation. And even then, you still don't know because it's the mysterious will of Allah. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. I don't know. You know, that's not the God of the Bible. How could you sit there and say that? How could that ever come out of your mouth as a Christian? Okay, but he's promoting this thing called King's Way out there, and Rick Warren has broken Ramadan fasts, okay, down there in Southern California at the mosque, the Muslim mosque, okay, and he's addressed 8,000 Muslims at a national convention in Washington, D.C. He's invited them, okay, Muslims, to Christmas dinner and played interfaith. Now, that's the buzzword. If you guys don't realize this, we expose this in our final countdown study. Interfaithism. Okay, is a buzzword for one world religion. So when you hear that on the news, when you hear that wherever in print, okay, interfaith means one world religion, because that's what you're doing. You're trying to combine all religions under one umbrella. Okay, but they're playing interfaith down there at Saddleback, interfaith soccer picnics. Okay, one of them was over by over 300 people, and it pitted the pastors and the Islamic imams against the teens from both faiths. Okay. Then again, the whole point is they're coming together to build a document that affirms how they can, quote, coexist, right? Christians and Muslims, they say, believe in one God. And then they share two central commandments, he says, to love God and love your neighbor. What? Islam, there is no love. There is no warming up and chumming up with Allah because he's impersonal and indifferent. Okay. And that's, so how can that be, quote, the love of God? And two, love your neighbor? I already quoted, and you guys quoted from the Quran. Your neighbor, if your neighbor disagrees with you, what do? You chop his head off and you kill him. Folks, I'm sorry to be blunt, but this is the level of deceit. This is what you're not hearing in the media, and unfortunately, a lot of times, unfortunately, you're not even hearing in the church. Okay, but they're there to build these, you know, build peace, work together, all that stuff, right? And this is what got me. Okay, now listen to this, folks. They sit there, and they had said this. Not only are they trying to say that we worship the same God and that we just love each other and love our neighbor, and that's not true, but I'm going to read a direct quote. Quote, we agreed, this is Rick Warren, we agreed we wouldn't try to evangelize each other. What? Now, put that in the Christian context, right? Jesus, before he went into the right hand of the Father, Matthew 28, the last thing he told his disciples, right, is he says, you know, the Great Commission. You know, go into all the world and share the gospel, right? Right? Notice it wasn't the grand suggestion, right? It was the Great Commission. Why? Because he's the only way to heaven. He's the only way to escape hell. It's Jesus, right? That's an important charge, right? And so here you have, and basically what that means is, here's the reality, folks. Every religion on the planet, I didn't say this, Jesus did, every religion on the planet, every cult, everybody who thinks that something else other than Jesus leads straight to hell, right? So how could you sit there and call yourself a Christian, number one? How could you sit there and call yourself a loving Christian, number one, if you know the way out, the only way out is through Jesus Christ, and you know somebody is on a false path, be it Islam, be it whatever false religion there is, and you agree to keep your mouth shut? I don't want friends like that. In fact, that would be the most unloving thing I could ever do. And yet here you are saying you're a loving Christian and you agreed not to evangelize these people who were headed to hell. Absolutely crazy. Now, what they're doing is they're taking the next step. And it's one thing for that individual church to do that, but they're encouraging churches all across America, you need to do the same thing as well. Okay? And you need to invite Muslims and you need to let them preach from your pulpit. Okay? On and on it goes. One of the groups that they're working with is called Faith Shared, if you want to check that out. And they're asking, quote, houses of worship across the country to organize events involving clergy reading from each other's sacred texts. An example would be, and I quote, a Christian minister, a Jewish rabbi, and a Muslim imam participating in a worship service or other event. And suggested readings will be provided from the Torah, the Gospels, and the Quran. And we will also provide suggestions on how to, quote, incorporate this program into your regular worship services. What? Folks, this is going on in the church. It's absolutely insane. Okay? And this is, again, this is the level of deceit. What did Jesus say? Before he talked about earthquakes, famines, pestilence, wars, etc., blah, blah, the first thing out of his mouth was, watch out that nobody deceives you. And it's getting so bad, folks, that that person who might be trying to deceive you might be from the pulpit. It's getting that bad.
absolutely. And Pastor Crone, we're coming up against the top of the hour break. But, you know, from Obama back when he was running against John McCain in 2008, interviewed by George Stephanopoulos, when asked about, he mentioned, John McCain has not, you know, asked about my Muslim faith, and he was corrected by the interviewer saying my Christian faith. And he said, oh yes, my Christian faith. There's something dark and sinister. There has been something dark and sinister in the works inside our own government. And this is the big problem. The authority, the people who are paid to protect us and represent us have turned their back on us. And we're going to get into this on the other side. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report with Pastor Billy Crone. GetALifeMedia.com, GetALifeMedia.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.